Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldaya.
It's been a while, freedom child.
All right. Welcome, Siobhan. So happy to have you.
Lovely to be here, Emily.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your story. And I just want you to take your time and take us from the beginning and tell us about who you are in this big motherhood journey that you're on.
It's interesting, you know, that question, when did you decide to have a free birth? You know, I decided to have a free birth in my first pregnancy. I moved into a house and it was beside this other woman, and she had this library of all these enlightened, you know, the alternative literature that every young mother should find. And I read The Birth Keepers and Laura Shanley's Unassisted Childbirth. And these two books were, they had a profound impact on me, and I was like, this is it. I just, because the situation that I was in was, I was 36. It was my first pregnancy. We didn't have a home. We were kind of moving around, and I applied for the HSE home birth. So the Health Service Executive in Ireland has a home birth scheme. And now it's very minimal. And the insurance requirements on these midwives are really strict. So they had to sign a memorandum to continue to operate, basically, all the community midwives. There's no community element in Ireland in the training. So essentially all midwives in Ireland are just obstetric nurses. Technically, they're just obstetric nurses, because the community midwives, the ones that we have, the 20 who serve the entire country, are all trained in England, mostly, where they can actually get some experience. And then they go over there and come back, or a lot of them are English. Few enough of them are actually Irish. And in this insurance, the new memorandum of understanding that they had to sign, which kind of really restricted them a few years, it was 2008, so a good few years before it kind of became relevant to me. And I hadn't a clue about any of this prior to my pregnancy, but I'm a researcher and a reader. And so I really went into it when I did get pregnant. And I, one of those requirements, those insurance requirements, was that there would be two midwives attending every mother. Mm-hmm. So this kind of made it impossible. When you think of, there's 20 in the country.
Right.
So in Kerry, there was just one, and the other one had retired, but they said that they were going to get another one, and that she could come along any day now and we could recruit, you know. So I said, okay, I'll go through the rigmarole and I'll get my, go in and get the scan. And I felt a little bit uncomfortable with the scan, I have to say. I was like, I couldn't find any research on it. I was already out of the medical paradigm. My mother had died from renal cancer a few years previously. And that's when I went through the rabbit hole. I researched what it was. I realized it was an industry, that it wasn't a healthcare model, that it was a financial model. And this, you know, I realized that probably by the surgery and removing her kidneys, they had removed her chance of survival, you know, and put her on, as she was a full-time renal dialysis patient for 8 years and then died, you know. And that's pretty much, once they remove your vital organs, that's all you're looking at. So I was already done with that. Yeah. So when I applied for the home birth, yeah, I satisfied all their criteria, because I was healthy and strong. I think vegetarianism was a bit of a black mark, but apart from that, I didn't have any others. And they were just kind of stringing me along, and they were saying, "We might get that midwife yet, you know." And I was so actually, it was so outrageous to me because, you know, being a young Irish woman, you don't really encounter discrimination. You know, you're kind of floating around, and everything's great, you know. And then you're in the system all of a sudden when you become a mother. Like all of a sudden, you start to really come up against it. And I'm a performance artist. I made a one-woman show actually at the time. I was like, I'm doing a show about this. This is outrageous. And all the things that were the comedy of it all, you know, where they tell you avoid soft cheese, but no one's telling you about the fluoride in the water and this sort of farcical situation that you find yourself in, you know, where the doctor's like putting this scan on you that he has no idea what the. You know, nobody could tell me what the long-term effects were, if there was any mal effects from ultrasounds. And yet they were all telling me, you know, to cook my eggs, like, and like ensure that I had enough iron, and you know, so yeah, like the contradictions and the farce were they inspired a show. So my advocacy started from the very beginning, I think. I just became an advocate as soon as I was pregnant of maternity rights. And when people asked me what way I realized that they weren't going to get the midwife, and I was like, I'm not going to get a midwife, and I don't want to go in there, so I'll just do it at home alone, not alone, with my partner Dermot, who was totally with me, you know. And I got two friends who hadn't much experience, but they were there to support me. And we got a pool, and we got a really nice house when I was 8 months, and it was all sweet, like it was sweet. I had a lovely birth circle, and the friends came over, and you know, we did a heartbeat meditation, and like we were ready to go, like. And it was, I just wasn't prepared for how long it was going to take, you know. I was thinking, like, I went into labor, or what, you know, I now know to be pre-labor, but I mean, it felt pretty intense for a pre-labor. And Dermot sent out the text messages to the family saying, you know, Siobhan's getting into labor, you can start praying now, you know. And then it was like one day, and then 2 days. It was 48 hours, 2 days maybe, by the time I was losing energy. It was 3 days in total. I don't really know how to measure it. We kind of lost
Right.
track of time, but it was definitely the third day. And I couldn't eat, or I couldn't eat anything. I could drink, that was all. And I was lo losing energy. And but my fa I wasn't losing faith. But what happened was the house started to fill up with concerned family members.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they were just like, and they were so. They were good and support, you know, they were good, like, but it was just and then my cousin came, who's a doctor, you know, and he was being really good too. He was like, you know, he was prepared to deliver the baby if he needed to, you know. But he did check the heart rate, said it's a bit low, I'm a bit concerned. And then everyone was a bit concerned, and then there was this vibe of concern. And you know, it just, I was like, okay, there's like, we just go in and we get checked out, and then we'll come away home, and it'll be grand. And we went in at 3 o'clock in the morning. And she goes, once you get in there, I had no idea. The place is like a blessed prison. I had no idea. I mean, you're going in security doors, like, you know, and there's bars on the window. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, I knew as soon as we get in there, like they were treating me also, because I hadn't gone in for the, I kind of dropped out of off their radar. I hadn't gone in for the last few scans. And it was the belly of the beast. I swear, the hostility we encountered, because I was saying no to the fetal monitor, and I was saying no, and they were like, did you plan to have this child at home on your own? You know what I mean? And like, and I was, so they kind of, it was really oppositionary from the start. There was a beautiful midwife there at one point, and she was pregnant herself, and she was like, give me your oils and your, you know, I brought in me a few oils and crystals, and I was like, oh my God, maybe we can, like, you know, it'll be okay. And like, and then once she left, and the shift changed, the next woman came on was Gráinne. Gráinne in Irish means like hate. It was funny, you know how things are just the symbols become glaring when you're in that state. Got so much to say, Emily. I'm like hearing through it. Basically, because I turned down the antibiotics because the membranes had ruptured more than 18 hours previous. Now, 18 hours is all you get in an Irish hospital. I mean, it was, and I could even hear her say, I thought it was 24 hours. She was saying to the other midwife, I thought it was 24 hours. She goes, it was, but we changed it to 18 now because it's 18 now. And I looked it up later, and I've since lost the reference because I don't know, it's come off the internet. I looked it up later, and I was finding 72 hours was allowed in a lot of French hospitals before routine administration of
Well, it's
antibiotics.
completely arbitrary. It's
Garbage.
not like a real anything. It's
No,
the very
no.
fact that there's complete change from hospital to hospital, even in one county sometimes, is it would almost be funny if it wasn't so offensive.
Yeah, that's it. It would almost be funny if it wasn't so offensive. Exactly. Yeah. And so this 18, and I'm looking at the clock and they're looking at the clock because they wanted to give me antibiotics. And I said, no, I'm not taking any of that. I don't want my baby to have any of that. Like, you know. And I said, there's no concern. Like, there's a risk of sepsis because I was shivering. You know, that was my bioindicator of sepsis, like, as I was shivering. And was like, I think just the hostility. I can remember the hostility. This is an emergency delivery. Co the coaching, the derogatory, like the derogatory comments. Like, I'm not leaving my midwives to the wolves, the obstetrician said. I requested that she leave the room because she was a total cow. Like, I mean, and I wasn't like I am now. I wasn't, you know, assertive performance artist. I was like totally vulnerable, weeping, kind of going, Jesus, let me out of this place. Like, and Dermot was like my warrior, you know. And I was thinking, thank Christ, imagine if you hadn't that. And I think that offended them even more because everything about us seemed to offend them. Why did you come here if you didn't want intervention? Why did you come here if you didn't want our help? I was like, oh, well, I thought I could get checked out and leave, actually, you know, like I didn't really. So the child was born and they cut the cord immediately because it was an emergency delivery. So it was treated like emergency. The room filled up with people. 11, dear, it was 11 people came into the room. Like, I don't know, was it 11 people? It was at 11 o'clock. So I think he got confused. But anyway, the room was full, pediatricians trying to drag the baby. Of course, I had the love gaze. Ishna opened his eyes immediately, like, not like the others. He opened his eyes immediately and they locked to mine. And we were just locked in this loving gaze, like, oh, and the oxytocin. And it was just this extraordinary moment. And it was really such a pantomime because it was a shit show. There was so much ha happening in the room and we were like in the middle of it. And Dermot is like, leave her alone, they have to bond, they have to bond, we have to clean the baby. And Dermot, be reasonable, stop him. And I'm like, I said, leave me bond. And I wouldn't let them, give me the baby, you're not taking the baby, give me the baby. And so 20 minutes, I kept the baby, Dermot held them back. And I think we got our 20, she goes, it's been 20 minutes, is what she said. And I was like, oh. And then I let them take the baby and I said, Dermot, stay with him. And Dermot went and he told me afterwards, all they did was fucking clean him. They didn't do it. They went to clean the big an emergency cleaning line. You know,
Well, if he hadn't have been hawk eyes on that baby, who knows what other stuff they could have done. I mean, lots of times they do injections and they, you know, the they'll will there's plenty of things available, but with him being Hawkeye's protector, that might have, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get
You
what you're
know,
saying.
yeah,
Oh, yeah.
maybe it's
Oh,
just the
by
back.
Christ, Emily, if we were any bit less on the ball. I mean, and we weren't on, I mean, as in not on the ball, but like assertive, you know. Like we went in kind of ready, you know, like we went in. And I think of all the women who, you know, and I had done all that reading, you know, all that alternative reading, like, you know, like being armed with Laura Shanley's book is something else. Like, I mean, it details the domino effects of intervention, you know. So I had
But
it all up.
you went because you were worried.
I was worried. The fear, the doubt got into me. It
Yeah.
was 3 days. You know, may there was the heart rate might be low, you might lose power. We can go in and get checked out and come away. I went in thinking we can go in and get checked out and come away. Oh, you're not, oh, you're not going anywhere now. You're 8 centimeters. Oh, no, you can't leave. But I mean, I probably could have, but the door was locked, like, and I did check out the window, you
Wait,
know.
what
I
do you
mean,
mean the door was locked?
they locked the door. So when you go into the, not my door, but to get in onto the ward, to get onto the delivery ward, you can only open it from behind. I mean, this is like I didn't check the door, but I know that getting in, they had to buzz us in.
Yeah, you can get out. You can get out. You can't get in. You could have gotten out, but
You
this is
think?
speak definitely. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
not actual prison. It's a illusion of prison that we all participate in. You
I
know, it's like
know.
the you know that story of the elephant, the tiny elephant who's tied to the little peg, and then when he's big, he's still tied to the little peg, and he could totally tear it out of the ground, but he's been so conditioned that it keeps him where he is. He will never. Do you know that story?
No, but
Okay,
I get you.
like a children's story, but it's
Yeah.
and it's the same thing with the hospital that of course you could literally leave, but the spell that is cast, you know, from our deep conditioning, from the white coat, you know, syndrome, from all everything, from the whole thing we're born into. It, even though you could literally leave, it's basically meaningless because you won't. And by you, I mean everyone.
I know, I know. And I tell you, if I like, you know, it progresses, then you go beyond moving, then, you know, the thought of getting into the car, or you're just in it as well. You know, all of this is happening, but it's also happening on the surface, and underneath there's something else going on, you know.
Exactly.
And so you tell the story, but it's like it's still a story of what's happening on the surface.
Matriarch Rising Festival, our annual summer solstice women's gathering, is here on my gorgeous land in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And it is the place to connect with me and the free birthing women and sovereign midwives of this epic birth liberation movement. I teach classes and host an intimate meet and greet the very first night of the festival, and you will even catch me DJing. Yes, I am Matriarch One. You'll get to meet all of our Free Birth Society luminaries, our wise women teachers, who you know from your favorite FBS courses. You'll meet the very women I interview on this podcast. This is the place for wild women and moms to meet up, connect, and forge friendships that can last a lifetime. It's truly the climax of everything we do, and MRF is so close to my heart. We're scaling back MRF 25 to be the most intimate yet, capping it at only 150 tickets, because this year I want to go deep. I just love the experience of getting to know each and every one of you by the end of the festival. For a long time, I held the vision of creating a women's gathering where true sisterhood could be woven, and Matriarch Rising is the manifestation of my dreams. I'm so glad I get to share it with all of you, and I want you there this year. Come learn directly from me and surround yourself with powerful women from all ages, all walks of life, and from all over the world. Make sure you sign up for our mailing list so that you can be the first to know when we roll out all of our insider insights of this summer's festival. I'll see you soon. I think a lot of us are up for free birth until period. And I mean, for me, I've only had two babies this way, you know, but the first birth, I wasn't prepared. I had a 3-day birth, And I was not prepared for that. And I made up that that must mean something is wrong, even though in my sane mind, I know that's not true about birth, but I made it up. But what you're saying underneath it, it's because I didn't really understand self-responsibility yet. And so I still had tentacles into the system, and I still had tentacles, outsourcing into away from me, and that's not bad. That's not wrong. It's the younger versions of ourselves, and there's so much here for our learning. I do so many sessions with women who have, they try to free birth and then they don't, and they go to the hospital, and then they beat themselves up about it. And I just think there's so much underneath that to learn about who we are and where we are and our actual commitments and desires. But it's only in facing this stuff that we can mature and that we could choose something different someday.
Yeah, and the education of going in there as well.
Sure.
You know, that's, I mean, that created my advocacy. You know, so from that perspective, I can see the perfection of it. But yeah, I think the 3-day labor, being prepared for that would be a big thing for a first-time mother to learn
Yeah.
about. You know, I don't know why I wasn't, but I just didn't expect it to take that long.
Well, in this, but in the system, births aren't allowed to take that long unless they're inductions. And so we do not have stories in our collective of long births because they don't exist in the system, right? And so, every now and then you might hear of a home birth story like that with kind of a lucky scenario, but that was a big part of my realizing of pathologizing my long birth was, oh, I didn't have a reference point for how normal it was because I'm in a society where this isn't allowed. Oh, okay. I can find forgiveness and curiosity and softness for the part of me that just didn't know yet.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also in the things that come up, you know, the vitamin K and the blood sugar levels being low. So blood sugar levels are low. He hasn't had colostrum. There must be sepsis. He's a little bit blue. He's blue because they cut the cord, obviously, with half a third of his blood in there. You know, we want to take his bloods before he gets colostrum. And so we'll just pacify him with a shot of glucose, which is sugar, refined sugar. So refined sugar being the child's first food rather than colostrum, because they wouldn't wait for me to give him the colostrum. You know, and here's me having read, oh, like The Case Against Sugar by Gary Taubes and Michelle Odent's Microbiome. And you know what I mean? The more you know, like, the more you're horrified. And of course, I was even campaigning on EMFs at the time, you know, and I'm surrounded by them inside in this hospital room, like, and you know how that is disturbing to the child's bioelectric field. And you know, it's the least optimum environment, you know. And a lot of mothers, when they first go in there, they don't know that it is. But I knew, and I think it's good, this catalogue of things as well. And it made me very effective as an advocate afterwards, you know, the things that I had to go through. They called Tusla, which is social services, because I refused antibiotics for him. They called the Gardaí Síochána. They said they would call the guards if I continued to refuse. They said they would get a court order. But it was Sunday, and they would have to wait till the Monday, so they'd have to keep me for the Sunday. Because when you are a state at home birth, you're not, and you have a natural delivery in hospital, then it's hospital policy to let you out more prior to the 3 days. You know, some mothers want to stay the 3 days and they kick them out. But for me, they were keeping me in for observation. They said for 3 days because the blood and sugar, the salt and sugar levels were low. This is a very common thing. Salt and sugar levels are low. Now, I hadn't eaten for 3 days. I said, my salt and sugar levels are low. You've got to get the feeds up. You've got to get the feeds up. There was this pressure in these 3 days. Get the feeds up so you can get his salt and sugar less. Otherwise, we have to give him formula. I was like, you're not giving him formula. So that's because this formula has whatever they need to sign off on the tests, like, you know, and whatever else is in the formula. They want to give the baby a bath. They're using Johnson's and Johnson's. It has this, like, fucking triclosan in it. Like, and I'm like, what are you doing? You don't know. You're not. And will I take the baby? Oh, you're sleeping with the baby. That's a bit dangerous. I'm sleeping with the baby. You know, daddy has to go. Daddy's not going anywhere. You know, like, it's just, it's at every turn. You're not getting the heel prick, because the heel prick, they take the bloods and they have a data bank for 20 years. And I don't see any point for these very rare diseases. And because I know a little bit about surveillance capitalism, you know what I mean? So this, it's a litany. It's a litany, isn't it? I mean, I'm going through these things quickly because I'm assuming that, you know, we're sort of a certain mindset, you know. When we opt for home birth, we've gone through like a certain gambit of information and processed and integrated the world that we live in. Like, and these are very crucial things. Like, you can list them. These are very crucial things to know, you know, and what you can only do navigating them in you're using your diplomacy, sometimes you're trying to comply, you're trying to appear complicit, or you're going assertive, you know, all different tactics, because it's literally constant. Like, refusing the fetal monitor, they asked me about 50 times, would I not take it? You know, I'm sorry, I'm all right with that. I'm refusing syncytosin. I had to sign a waiver that I'm risking postpartum hemorrhage and death by refusing syncytosin. I'm like, grand, I'll sign it, no bother. I'll sign whatever you want. Just leave me alone. Like, and I signed it, and they continued to push syncytosin every blessed hour, you know. So it's just like, it's like relentless drug pushing, relentless machine pushing, and relentless nappy checking, undermining, disempowering. Would you not eat that? I'm sorry, I don't eat chicken. I'm sorry, I don't eat like that shit. And, you know, and I'm trying to get my salt and sugar levels up, and, you know, and they're like, have a tuk tuk. And this is the breastfeeding fridge, and it's full of Dairy cheese. And thank you. But anyway, listen, that's Isha's birth. So that was Isha's birth. So I came out and I was totally and utterly cross and, you know, outraged. And
this is obstetrics, ladies and gentlemen. You know, what really chaps my ass is the rhetoric that's out there right now, that if you just know your rights and if you just know how to advocate, nothing without your consent will happen. I fucking hate that. It is such a lie. It is such a myth. And so these women believe that because the rest of their exposure to adulthood does operate that way, right? Like, in most of the world, in exactly. most of society, yeah.
In you most do, areas, you would be able to assert yourself.
You have, right. You have no clue that when you're going in, you will be treated like a little shitty kid that everyone hates.
Yeah, I mean, it is desperate. I have never been treated with such contempt in my whole life.
Of course not.
In my whole life, you know? It was totally outrageous, like. And to do that to the very, you know, to the woman you should be serving hand and foot, like, you know?
I mean, yeah, wrong place for that, but...
Wrong place for that, yeah. And it's enculturated in there. And, you know, and there are midwives who are, you know, they're trying to be very nice, you know, and they, you know, because there's humanity in them, like, but really, really, there's nothing they can do, like, because they're...
Well, they choose that job. It's not like they're victims, like, they choose to go work at the torture factory, you know, and maybe they feel like they're little angels in the dark, evil system, because they bring a little more humanitarianism to their patients, but they're doing fundal abuse, they're drug pushers. They're taking babies away. They just might be doing it in a bit kinder way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that puts a fire under your ass.
It put a fire under my ass. I sent in a complaint. It took me a year to write the complaint. It was very thorough. I had a list of recommendations of things that they should change and how I was treated. They said they'd bring me into a mediation process with the obstetrician. I couldn't wait to look her in the eye. They never did it. And, but they got a written response from her. They sent me a year to write the complaint. They sent another year. I did an FOI to get my file, which was that I couldn't bear to read it by the time I got it. Anyway, I was already over it. Like, mother is coping. I was like, ugh. And, you know, they eventually responded to the complaint, said that they had done everything by the book and that there was no fault anywhere.
But Siobhan, they did.
They did. That's exactly right.
That is the book. You can't complain to the people who made the book. Like, they did exactly what
Well, the thing is they say to you when you go to your first appointment, we do skin to skin. We allow 30 minutes skin to skin with mother.
Oh, yeah, they lie.
We wait for the umbilical cord. We wait 3 minutes for the umbilical cord to stop pulsing. But they said that all of those things were voided because it was an emergency
Of
delivery.
course, of
But they
course. And it
decided it
always
was an
is.
emergency. Yeah, you
Yep,
see, and they
exactly.
just,
So
yeah.
this is one of the greatest cons because since they're allowed to pull the authority card, and because they know how to keep your baby alive. They know how to decide what baby needs, not you, just like the stupid woman who grew the baby, right? And who's then going to mother the baby the rest of their life. That's totally irrelevant within the walls of the hospital. And so they get to justify actual intentional lying. They are never actually going, this whole baby friendly concept, it's just a con. And it's so obviously a con. Always, there's these hospitals around the world that say that they do water birth. And so these women go and they pay for the extra water suite and all of this stuff. Oh, but they forgot to mention that once your waters are open, you can't be in the water. Oh, I'm so sorry, honey. Better luck next time. It's just they're con artists and it's completely legal. You know? It's amazing.
Completely. Yeah, so by the time birth number two came, pregnancy number two, it was lockdown. And nobody was going anywhere, and I certainly wasn't going into a hospital, and I wasn't going to bother with the HSE community midwife
Yeah, of
service.
course.
Even, they had found another midwife at that time, but I wasn't going to go through the rigmarole. And I mean, still, ideally, I would have liked a midwife, somebody there who, to support me. That was still my ideal. Yes, I didn't. I just had no time for anything like that. So off-grid pregnancy, and it was all healthy. It was all good. But on the 30, it's actually, this is where you come into the story, because myself and Dermot did the free birth course. Then we read that, and we just felt like, okay, yeah, we're in. We are made here. It was really, it's great. It's great. It's brilliant. You're great, and it was so empowering for us as well, and as well as because it's so like this, it's not soft at all. It's so hard, it's very hard, and it's good. It needs to be hard. And we I woke on, it was about the 36th week, and I just woke in a pool of blood, and I was bleeding, 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 and I was just like, oh Jesus, I thought I was having a miscarriage. And I was like, I didn't want to call, I called, I had, there was a great woman, Faye Leggett, and I called Faye, and she's a free birth, she had her own free births, and she was like, it could be okay, it's like, don't worry, just sit tight and just stay steady. And she gave me advice on the phone, because I just didn't want to go in there. And dear was like, I think we should go in. And I was like, just Google it, maybe Google it. Let's see what comes up. That was the first thing we did, and it all says, all you can find on internet is like miscarriage. If it's a 36-week bleed, it's miscarriage. But like, I didn't feel, I was like tuning in. She's like, tune into the baby now. Tune into the baby and see. And I was like, is that a miscarriage? Is that a miscarriage? I'm tuning in, but you're there, like battling with your fear, this wave of fear. And because the last birth, it was like I felt like if I'd have just kept the faith, if I'd have just kept the faith, I would have had my free birth at home, I would have had my child at home and avoided all that trauma. So I'm like, I'm not losing the faith this time, I'm staying put. And so the bleeding stopped, and Faye said, just rest. So I was almost afraid. I just stayed in bed for the next couple of days, and then I got up and about a little bit. And then after a week, I had another, I same thing, I woke just bleeding, and it was kind of gushing, So I got a bit of a fright, and I was like, okay. And I told Dermot if I had another bleed, I'd go in. That was kind of, because for him as well, he's not in my body, like he's kind of like, and he's just got to like trust me fully, and that's hard. So you kind of come to a compromise too, where you say, okay, if there's another bleed, I'll go, you know? And yeah, so I went in and they said it's a placenta previa. And even like I said, okay, what does that mean? And you know, and she's, and of course with the raised eyebrows, oh, you haven't had any scan, we haven't seen you, we haven't, you know, this is your first visit. Oh, but sure, they knew me probably from the files that they had on me, you know. And the first thing, your baby could die, Siobhan. You need to take this very seriously. The first thing that, you know, she said, like, your baby could die. And that's what they were saying to me. It's like, your baby could die. Do you realize your baby could die? Your baby could die. You know, they're so quick to say that, like, to an expectant mother. And, you know, did I say, how dare you speak to me like that? No, I didn't. I burst into tears because the vulnerability of you, like, you know, that's what galls me. Like, my usual, you know, activist self, like, just gets shelved because I'm all hormone and mammy, like, you know, and then I just want to kill them afterwards, like, for, but. Your baby could die. You need a C-section. We need to schedule a C-section immediately. I said, no, you're not doing that. I'm going home. So I went home. I told Diarmaid, and I wrote to Yolanda. Because that you were all we had anyway, like, because we weren't good anyway. And Yolanda said, get the pictures. Fair play to her. Now she found the time. She responded straight away and she sent me a decent email and she said, get the pictures from the ultrasound and let's see what kind of grade is it. So I called them, I said, what grade is it? And they said, oh, we don't grade it anymore. So they wouldn't give me that information. They said, we don't grade it. It's just serious or not serious, and yours is serious. Something like that. So there was no, and the doctor, I said, is there a possibility that the it can move? You know, because Yolanda said it can move, you know, you can it can move right up until the end. They said yes, there's a possibility it can move. I said fine, then I'm waiting, you know, I'm not going in. And I waited and I went into labor then on the 3rd of January, and it was just a, such beautiful ecstatic feeling. And even Diarmaid building a birth lodge out the front. It was freezing cold in January, like, but I was so in like Christmas miracle mode. I was like, we'll have our miracle. This baby will be born at home. And even Yolanda said, well, this would be the 0.2% of cases where you do need to go to hospital. Like, you know, she's like, look, if the baby can't get out, if it's serious, you'll have to go in. Like, and I was like, well, I was like, if Yolanda Clark says, maybe I have to go in. But I was still praying for a miracle. Like, I was still praying that it wouldn't be necessary, you know? And it was important to me for the labor to start. And for this child to choose their own time to arrive, the idea of induction and scheduling and electives. And I was like, I'm not doing that anyway. And so I started and I was surging away downstairs and beautiful, ecstatic, like, and it was one of these moments, like, oh God, she's coming, she's coming. And I knew in that moment she was a girl. And then it was kind of the surges kind of changed, the quality of the surges changed. And it was like, and there was kind of then this kind of, it was like a pounding on the perineum, you know, and I was like, oh. That's a bit different now. You know, that's maybe. And I had the thought, she can't get out. And just that thought, and whether the thought was true or not, like, it was enough. And I said, Dean, we have to go in. And so we made a bed, and it was a beautiful full moon, a frosty night. God, I remember it in the back of the van. And I was like a samurai because the contractions were, or the surges were already on top of one another. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I went into the hospital. Oh, the obstetrician will be in it at 10 a.m. I was like, right. So all my vipassanas like came into play there in that moment, like, you know, and I was just observed the sensation, observing and not moving, you know, because if I moved at all, you know, I was in it, like, and so I was stock still, but I was able to be samurai, and I was able to be in the vortex in there. And I went in and they did the first ever, like, it was quite a beautiful experience. You wouldn't believe it, like, you know, I was somehow protected in it. Now it was grown in, it was the hospital, like, you know, but they stayed away from me. Nobody came near me, like, and I went in and I said, I would like the vaginal swab. Oh, we don't do vaginal swab. We've never done that. And I said, fine. And I just got all the tissue and got the and gave Diarmaid. Diarmaid had pockets full of tissue with vaginal mucus. I said, fine, Diarmaid will do it. because that's and then I don't need the screen, that's fine. And the woman who came out to me, her name, and it was the anniversary of my mother's death, the very hour my mother died, my daughter was born. And
Whoa.
do you know what? My mother's name was Joan. And the first woman I saw when I went in, I went in, my theatre support, hello, Joan is Anam Dumpsis, Bemid the Takiacht. She was talking in Irish for the start. And she said, I'll be your support. My name is Joan. And it was just like, and Dr. Hughes, as he delivered the child, and she was blessed golden coming out. It was a golden sheen off her. Handed her to me. She latched. We'll have to take the child away in recovery, they'd said previously. I said, you won't be doing that. They didn't even try to do that. Dr. Hughes says, oh, let's do the vaginal swab. Why not? He did the vaginal swab. It was just like everybody was on my side. It was quite extraordinary. It was quite extraordinary that, and they didn't touch her and they didn't move her for the 3 days while we were in there. Nobody came near her. I co-slept. Nobody tried to check her nappy or check her anything. They just left me alone because I was the patient and they were all fuss about me. And are you okay? And oh God, are you all right? And they were fist button. Whereas previously Ishna had been the patient and they were put, this is our patient. We have a responsibility to give our patient antibiotics. You're healthy, mama. You've had spontaneous vaginal delivery, but now you're a patient.
You also, like you went in for them to do the thing they like to do.
Exactly,
You know,
exactly.
you were essentially compliant.
Exactly, exactly.
And
And that
there
was the key.
is it,
That was the
right.
key.
Like and I can think back to all the births I've attended in the hospital, and when the moms come in to get the surgery, it goes a lot better.
Oh yeah, that's what it's
Versus
for.
your first birth.
I was
Yeah.
there to get what they, that's what they're
Offer.
trained to do. It was like, and I mean, they were thrilled because it was probably the first essential C-section they'd done in a very long time. You know what I mean? They actually did need to intervene. Like, I mean, how many? It's a 30% rate average in most Irish hospitals now. 30%, one in three mothers. Like, it's nearly one in two of first-time mothers. It's outrageous. Like, so it was a, yeah, you're right. That's it. Exactly. I went in to do the thing that they're trained to do. I was that 2%. That the whole blessed system is there to serve,
Though I would be curious to have seen on the ultrasound at the time of the birth process where the placenta was. I'd
Well,
be just
I said
curious.
before, I said, I'm not going in without another one last ultrasound, and to see if I was still kind of holding it out till the very
Yeah.
end, like, and they said they couldn't see that the head was too far down, the last ultrasound. I can't see, I just can't see a thing. I can't see a thing. So, because they couldn't see, they couldn't make out whether the
Well, or they were not telling the truth.
placenta was blocking or they
Maybe.
were not touching. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. At the time, I thought maybe there was no choice. And now, you would think afterwards, was there? I do think there was a possibility I could have birthed her vaginally, actually. I thought that later. But at the time, I didn't. And because I was okay with it.
Totally.
Because I wasn't losing my agency. I was making my, I was choosing. And that was the key. I was choosing. So that was Eru. And then, so that was the 3 years between Eru and Ishna. The third birth was, at this stage, I'm 42 and I'm now a VBAC because I've had a C-section. A VBAC. So a vaginal birth after C-section is excluded from any home birth. And,
Yeah, you're really striking out with these shitty midwives.
because now I've moved out of Kerry and I actually do have access to a midwife. But I'm too old as well.
Oh, for sure. No, you're
42.
it's not gonna happen. Yeah.
I've two there's two red marks there. So anyway, I can give a shit because I'm definitely Having a free birth. And it was funny, like the progress. You know, the first time they were like, have you got a midwife? And you're like, yeah, no, I'm not a midwife. Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's great. Yeah. And you're kind of lying your way through it. Like, and then it was, have you got a midwife? No, I haven't a midwife. No, I don't need one. I'm birthing at home alone. I'm having an ecstatic birth. You know, and this, you know, like, of course, I've stayed in touch with all, I'm in the movement now, like I'm in the movement, like the free birth movement. I'm part of the community now, you know. So like I've heard the beautiful stories, like of the ecstatic birth, and that birth is the climax of sex. And I believe that, like, I'm like, oh Jesus, that's it. Like it's me and Dermot, you know, we're gonna have our greatest intimacy, like finally. And we found a house. We always seem to be homeless. I think it's a common story, actually. You know, the whole Jesus, Mary, and Joseph were onto something there, I think. But I suppose the child coming wants to move to the place it wants to come in. And we found a place, and there was a rookery and two horses, and it was so kept and held. And I was like, this is it. And the circle is here. Like you could feel the heldness of this little space that we found, you know, this little place. And I had a baby shower, and didn't one of the women come? Baby shower of blessings, I call it, not a shower of gifts, shower of blessings. And one of the women that came does the family constellations. And after the baby shower, she did a family constellation and cleared the birth trauma out of the maternal line. You know, for the baby blessing, like, and all very spontaneously happened. So the signs and were very good. And there's a few now. What's changed here in Ireland basically is that now there's a few birth keepers knocking around. So from the 6 years since I had Ishna, there's now an ecosystem forming. And like I was scrounging around for somebody to call when I was pregnant with Ishna, but now I've got three phone numbers of women who have experience, who can attend me, and who are, you know, outside of the system completely, who are of the same paradigm, you know. So fairly sorted, like it's great, you know. It's great to have that. I still didn't want them there. I still wanted to do it on my own, but to have them on the phone was really something. And touring, it was all, oh my God, it was all ecstatic. My orgasmic oxytocin trip, unplugged, took a twist, and all of heaven broke loose in amniotic juice. I wrote a poem, became a wild ride of determined grist.
Wait, you
And
wrote a poem about this?
yes,
Do you have it memorized?
I think I do.
Oh, please
In the
perform
spirit
it.
of Sheila, I speak. Sheila na gig. Have you ever heard of Sheila na gig? She's like this open vulva, and she's ancient, and she's carved in stone all over Ireland. And she's from the pagan times. And she's just basically like this carving where she's just like sitting there, like, oh, I gotta. She's just like, do you know what I mean? Okay, I can't think like I'm standing in the chair, but it's just like, anyway, this is the Sheila na gig. She's very famous here, like. This is what happened, because I went into at 12 o'clock. It unplugged, you know, the it unplugged, and I was actually listening to Pia at the time, our mutual, and I was like, oh, to the well of the old ones, you will find it's not empty. Doing it. I thought it was the most beautiful thing. Like, oh.
Hell
And
yeah.
I bayed like Boanne in my Macca marathon, and I was horse and I was cow, and I was really so far gone. And like this, it became after at about midnight, it became extremely intense. And this was not someplace I'd gone to previously. This was active labor. What I'd had before was something else. I had the oxytocin trip, like, And it was, I went into push mode, right? And it was
like, and I proper just, you know.
Because what I happened was I just had a little bit of shit every time I pushed. So it was like, and this went on for 7 hours. In push, like, and I couldn't get sit down. I was just with this sort of bearing, and Dermot was trying to hold the perimeter, like, but he just, you know, Shawati's just there, like, and I faced myself, you know, I faced my doubt and my fear in the seven journeys. I went into this initiatory experience, like, that was, I had been waiting for 7 years, Emily. It was what I knew was coming, like, you face yourself, you know, it's doubt and faith and fear. It's like, is it, oh my God, will it ever come out? Like, will I have to go in? Is it going to happen? Am I stuck? Is he in the wrong place? You know, and all the narrative, like, and then instead you're going into the, I am the ocean. Like, you know, this is what I'm going to do. Just gonna read. On the dark night of the whole, of profound peristalsis, earth cracking, butt racking, soul unpacking from whole. This orgasmic oxytocic trip of meditative bliss unplugged, took a twist, and all of heaven broke loose in amniotic juice. Became a wild ride of determined grist, this meditative bliss. And I bayed like Boan in my Maca marathon, and I was horse and I was cow, and I was well and truly gone, and the waves bore down on me, and some of them I rode, while others wiped me out, and this shitstorm seemed relentless, so soon I lost all count, and I got stuck in a place between life and death, the edge of the unknown, and no place was set, and then I was the ocean. I was the swimmer in the wave, and only doubt could drown me, and only faith could save. It was the part and posture sitting on the bowl, the precise geometry to birth the waiting soul. And on the new moon of the worm under the elder tree, on Sunday morning after Saturday night, on a toilet seat and a tree stump, on a wing and a prayer of the ling and the puer, on the day of the mother into the hands of the father, he was born. The second son, the battle won, the kingdom come.
Thank you.
He finally came out on the toilet, you know, and that's what Sheila was telling me. She was saying, she, you know, like this Sheila Nagee, like, I realized what all this ancient carving that's all over Ireland, it's all over these ancient, you know, it's a birthing goddess.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really about the sex. And that posture, that particular posture sitting on the bowl, you know, and this thing that we don't talk about, like you don't get to see your shit in the hospital. You don't get to see your blood. You don't get to, you know, they clean that all up. But there was blood everywhere. And like this tree stump, that's what we used to, Eru has to get up on the toilet. And we had a little tree stump so she could reach the toilet, you know. So actually he was born on the toilet. But like all his blood went on this tree stump. And it was very like, it needed a huge head. And that's probably why it took so long, you know. But like this journey that we are deprived of, you know, you might get to go through a bit of you get to go through, but this journey where it's just you and you have to, and I think it had to be the 8 hours of push for me, like, because I needed to make up for what I was deprived of, maybe, you know. I had to go into this journey, like, of, and the minute, it was funny, the minute, and that's how we know the time of birth, actually, because I said, call the midwife, Dermot, maybe, because I was saying maybe he's not, because morning had come, you know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning, Mother's Day, And the child, the other children were waking, and I was like, that, you know, I was like, because I said, the child will be born by morning. The child will be born by morning, you know. And he wasn't born by morning. And I said, text her and tell her, tell the midwife to come. And the minute he texted her, the child came. You know, so it was like, and I was like, we, and sure, like it took, it was about 3 hours later before we realized what was the time of birth. And I said, it was the time you texted her.
Yeah.
That was it. Like, you know, it was like this, yeah, this moment of just help me, maybe. Maybe that was it. Help me, like. And all the blood that came after, was so much blood after. And that I was able to call a woman and say, is this okay? And she was like, that's okay. It's okay. That's fine. You know, I didn't need that support. I needed Sarah Kelleher, beautiful Sarah Kelleher, that I could call, like, you know. And I actually even, you know, was able to, like, send her a picture of my mucus plug going, that's a mucus plug, right? You know, you did, that's kind
Wait,
of support.
Is this, are these sovereign birth workers, or it was the medical midwife?
No. These are sovereign birth workers.
Okay.
These are sovereign birth workers who aren't licensed within the system. So it's safe for them. It's safe for them. I can't, you know, you can't mention anybody else, like, or, you know, there's nobody. Yeah, there's some people who can, you know, they'll help you, but they can't be mentioned, you know. So it was great. There's sovereign birth workers around now. And yeah, I think that postpartum and the mess and the blood and the, you know what I mean? That's really, it was great to have some support at that point. Mm-hmm. It's lovely to do it on your own. And I noticed, like, I'm so different after it, you know. I feel like I grew up. Like, I just finally came into my motherhood, you know. I've matured in so many ways. I'm enjoying him so much. Like, he's so chill, and I can leave him down. Even that, like, I was able to leave him down. Like, I remember the lads just always had to be up with me, you know. Like, Paterna just sleep away in the bed, you know. And I wonder about these differences as well. You know, I know there's certain things that are a difference of design and character, but there's a lot. I think there's the fact that he didn't leave that sacred little space. Like, you know, he was so held.
Well, and even more so than his experience, that you didn't leave the sacred space. You know, you're the one setting the tone for your babies, right? And that you felt better, that you got, you know, like you said, everything that you were ready to finally have. I think more than the baby going through that birth, it's they get the benefit of you going through it. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Not that it's irrelevant that they went through it. It's not. But, you know, when a regulated, happy, proud, connected mom, that's going to create a contented baby.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's incomparable. It's incomparable. You know, and on a spiritual level, like, Emily, the spiritual initiation of it, you know, that you would get to face, you know, to become an ocean and enter into that place, you know, that dimension, like, and be free to do that. Like, to ride the ocean of your own body. And to be, you know, you can't contrive that. You know, you can't contrive that. And I suppose that's what men do, you know, they go and fast in the wilderness for 5 days to try and come close to that. Like, you know, that's what the vision quest is, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. You know, women don't need a lot of that stuff. We have it built in.
Well, that's our initiation. That's our initiation.
It's built in.
It's built in, and it makes a mother. It makes a good mother of you. The ramifications are absolutely blessed, huge, huge, huge. Yeah. And to have gone through the gambit of it, and to see, you know, no matter how, like I said, you know, My birth stories aren't nowhere near as harrowing as other people. They all have, every one of them has a victory in him, like, you know, but incomparable, incomparable. And the aftermath, like you said, to be in the aftermath on your own, to be in your own space, to feel that sense of sovereignty, to feel like he's mine and he's nobody else's, you know.
And that nothing got taken from either of you.
Nothing got taken from
only us. Given. You know, like, God, what a place to start from.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if she look, but I became public. Then there was like I just wanted to tell everybody as well, you know.
Of course, naturally.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a gray area because there's a bit of scaremongering, a bit of fearmongering going on around the legality of it. You know, are you allowed to free birth? And so I wrote an article, and Dermot actually wrote an article, because we both, you know, we have both have journalist backgrounds, and it was published in a lovely it's an alternative magazine, but you know, a good journalistic magazine here, and it was picked up. The story was picked up by a very mainstream radio show. And Dermot and I were interviewed on that, and the child was just 2 weeks old, actually, at the time. And, you know, they gave it the full hour, and it's the lunchtime show, Joe Duffy. It's the, you know, the most listened to show in Ireland. And the women who called in were all very supportive. It was very. Even Joe himself, who's, you know, notoriously confrontational, was very, he was supportive enough for him, for Joe. He was, you know, and it's just, it shows how much of a sea change there is, really, you know, that it can be something like free birthing, which is deemed so radical, and it's not sneered out of the public sphere. As it, you know, or I'm not called like a reckless, endangering mother, you know. I'm, you know, just somebody who, you know, to normalize it. It's being normalized. It's like, no, actually, you know, I'm just having my baby, like, you know, that nonsense narrative that has been so unquestioned, like, you know, is that safe? You mean you chose not to have a medical profession? Yeah, that was my choice, yes. You know. And do you think that's safe? You're like, it's actually safer than being in, you know, we have our side is so reasonable. Our side is so.
Yeah, I know. I always say we have logic. We have nature on our side. Like those are, you know, like that we have nature on our side. That's a big one.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is. I agree. It is changing. I mean,
yes.
The last 6 years, a lot has shifted. A lot has changed. It's really, really exciting. It is definitely becoming more normal and accepted. And
over there too, yeah.
Oh,
you think it's a global thing?
Everywhere. I know it is. I know it is. You know, and it's not free birth. That is so radical, and that's so it's not free birth that's blowing everyone's mind and triggering them. It is adult women taking responsibility. That is actually what this is about. That women thinking for themselves and claiming their life, owning their decisions, standing in their own power and self-responsibility is not something that we have seen with any consistency for many, many, many generations. And that is the fundamental trigger point about free birth. You know, I think there are other points as well, as people are terrified of death and know nothing about birth. And like, yeah, there's other stuff also that's interesting to talk about and unpack. But a woman making her own decisions and standing in that and taking responsibility, that's not allowed. You know, that's very like, whoa. And it reveals, it's such a litmus test for misogyny. It reveals people's unconscious misogyny very quickly when women think for themselves and how would I say it? When women think for themselves, it's, you know, against the mainstream, you know, concepts and people get triggered about it. It's not really about birth. Well, I love your stories. I'm so glad you shared some of your poetry.
Me too.
Very, all of it was very entertaining. I loved it so much.
Oh, great, great.
Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's great to be on here and great to tell you the story, you know, because you're part of the story.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, it is. It's cool out now. When I was telling you, and I was like, oh, I'm talking to Emily today. He's like, oh, he was, yeah. Beautiful. So it's coming full circle. It's the grand finale.
Thank you.
Lovely.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back.